Hi, this is Iking Reyes, and you're on The Inspiring Leader. It's a podcast where we talk about things and stuff about life, love, and learning. Our guest for this episode is Mr. James Deacon. He's a road safety advocate, motoring enthusiast, and one of the country's foremost automotive journalists. Mr. Deacon, thank you for joining the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. And hello to everyone watching.
You spent the first 14 years of your life here in the Philippines before moving to Australia. What were some of the adjustments you made, or perhaps the challenges you met living at the land down under?
Lots. So many. I mean, like, it's such a major cultural adjustment, especially back in 1986 when I moved. So the first major adjustment was you have to do everything for yourself over there. So it was a bit of a rude awakening, but also something I'm very grateful for, because it matured me in a very different way, as a way that I probably may have not matured here. Because at the time when we grew up here, we weren't by any standards rich, but we did have household help. There you don't. And so we had to start learning to make our bed, learn to wash our dishes, cook our food, walk to school. All of these things were kind of new to us. And then also, this society, the way that they are over there, really, it does. There's no padrino system, or at least definitely not when I was there. Things might have changed now, but definitely when I was there, it was, you really have to just work on your own merits. You are Joe Blow. You are anonymous. You just have to really work on your skills and sell yourself, because there ain't no other advantage to have. Where you went to school, what color, what friends you have, didn't play out much there. So it was a good learning curve for me to basically harden up a little bit, because Manila life has its challenges, but there are some parts that make you a little soft.
You are dubbed as one of the Philippines' foremost automotive journalists. Where does your passion for cars come from? And if you were to design a car for the future, what would be the main feature?
I think, like every young boy growing up, it comes from this freedom, mobility. You know, it's this idea that, you know, there's a machine that can get you somewhere faster than anyone else. That's very primal, that feeling. I think especially for boys, because man always has a desire to beat the other man, race the other man, compete with the other man. And then anything that helps us get to that goal faster, like a machine, love it. So that's basically, like every other boy, it was a primal love for things mechanical and mostly mobility, because I can be wherever I want now. That started it. I just fell in love with it. My dad taught me to drive when I was 8, and I'll never forget the feeling of, you know, when you're actually in control of a car for the first time, and it's a manual, and you just feel invincible. You really feel as close to Iron Man as a kid could feel at 8 years old, because you put on this mechanical suit and now you could do things that your friends could never dream of. As in, like, other 8-year-olds were not even riding skateboards yet, and here I was driving a manual car. So that's where it all started. Then I got into sort of businesses that involved cars because I loved them. So I started selling cars in Australia, used cars, new cars. Then I opened a car detailing business, which was just when it sounds glamorous, but it was really just me. I didn't have staff. It was just me washing cars. But it was called James Home Services. And I would drive to your house and do your car and stuff like that. Now, what I would design if I was going to design a car, I never thought I'd say this, but autonomous would be the feature that I would include. And the reason I feel really bittersweet about this, because as a person who loves cars, obviously, driving the car is what makes it, you know, fulfills your passion. Having said that, as a road safety advocate, I also know that all the deaths are basically from human error. That needs to stop. So we cannot indulge our passion if it comes at that cost. Now we have technology that allows us to be able to make automated vehicles, autonomous cars, and these things would drastically reduce. The road safety would just, you can't even begin to put a figure on it, because yes, there are some things we need to iron out first. But once we get that done, the margin of safety that you would create would be like, imagine an aeroplane, how safe aeroplanes are, the safest form of travel, and yet it defies every logic, right? It's just hanging in the sky. But for some reason, by numbers, that is by far the safest form of travel ever. You know why? Autopilot. That's one of the biggest things, because you take away the human element. I mean, pilots are there for sure, but once they start cruising, autopilot, wala na. They don't get fatigued, they don't get enough. It's just, so if we could do that with cars, that would be how I would invent a car.
We see you almost everywhere, writing, blogging, podcasting, hosting, among others. Was there ever a point in your career when things felt overwhelming?
Definitely. I love what I do. So, but I'm also, how do I put this? There's a bit of a curse to that, loving what you do, because you never know when to stop. And we're only human. So loving what you do is, I can't think of a better thing to motivate and power you. But I also would urge you to just not see it as a complete solution to everything. And the more you do that, the better off you'll be, because there is a limit to it. After a while, you have to let go. You're human. You need to sleep. You need to rest. You need to rest your mind. So it does get overwhelming, because I want to do everything. And I want to do everything from I'm coming from this place where I don't know how long this will last, right? This comes from my background. I grew up very, very, very middle class, and then eventually broke. I won't say poor, because even though we didn't have anything, it was broke and poor, two different things. Poor is a mindset. And this is what people need to understand about poverty and poor. I'm not saying that you can just think your way out of everything. I'm not trying to oversimplify it, but poor is a mindset versus broke is just a temporary situation you're in. This is why don't refer to yourself as poor. Try not to do that, because you can talk yourself into existence. Broke is just a phase. And so I've been broke, I've been middle class, and I've been evicted and had really hard, hard times. So it, now that good times are here, I am cursed with this feeling that you gotta milk everything for all it's worth. You gotta make hay while the sun shines. You can't rest. There's plenty of time to rest when you're dead. That's the saying, right? Which is not really, that's a little bit too extreme now. But that's the curse now, why I'm trying to say it. People who love what they do so much, we can push so hard that we can get overwhelmed. We overwhelm ourselves. And we really have nobody else to blame but ourselves. So you can't even gain a little bit of comfort and solace in pointing the finger at somebody else going, hey, how can I say it? No, it's the pressure I put on myself. And I'm trying to learn that now. So it's a very timely question, because during the pandemic, I put my foot on the gas twice as hard. So I doubled down on everything. I was like, okay, pandemic equals opportunity. Because anytime there's a crisis like this in the world or life, it really just shakes the snow globe. So everything has an equal chance now. You've reset. It's like if you want to do it in car terms, in racing, safety cars come out, everybody forms again, and you restart the race. So you have another chance. All things are equal again for many things. And so I doubled down. I put my foot in the gas and I worked twice as hard as I've ever worked in my life, trying to gain a little bit of ground in terms of not just money, but it was more, I felt that the pandemic would create a void in people's lives, and they would need a voice that they found comfort in, a familiar voice to help guide them through and be with them through the shared struggle. So that's what we developed Tito Clock for over here, was to be with people. And it wasn't about money as much as it was building equity with your audience, because they'll never forget that. When you go through a shared struggle together, it builds a bond that's unlike anything you can create in any other normal time. So that's where I threw myself in. And then after about a year and a bit of doing that, the community was built up, and we have a good, strong community here of like-minded people. We all share that same memory and equal shared struggle that we had. But then I started feeling that overwhelming thing that you're talking about, because it was just like, when I kind of got my breath, I looked back and like, oh my gosh, I haven't even had time to. And so I'm slowly learning to turn off the computer a certain time, turn off this at a certain time, not take every engagement that comes my way, be a little bit more discerning, because you have to prioritize your well-being, your mental health, and also the people around you. I understand that being the breadwinner and being the sole source of income in my family unit, you also, that energy passes down, right? So how you're feeling affects your family. how you're feeling affects your friends, your colleagues. If I'm always just like this, and yeah, I might be able to contain it, but I don't realize the effect I'm having on others. And I'm very particular about that.
Your social media game is lit. The TikTok and YouTube videos, your Instagram posts, they're relevant, informative, and funny. Do you plan those things?
It's very spontaneous. The only things that are really planned are, we have some, obviously there's a content management plan usually with the brands we work with, but anything that comes that's organic, anything that is non-engagement, brand co-branding, it's 100% spontaneous. And I think it has to be, because people smell it. People smell it when you're not authentic. They just know it. And they can't even put their finger on it. I can't, but I just know who I like and who I don't like. And usually if I study it long enough, if I analyze it, it's down to authenticity. If I feel the person's not being genuine, I can't. I just can't. There's something inside me that doesn't unlock to that person. So I live my life like that, especially on social media, because I believe that authenticity is the strongest currency right now online, because there's such a shortage of it. It's scarcity. It's developed from scarcity. So if you can be authentic online and not be afraid of what people think of you, because if you're worried about what people think about you and you're worried about haters and stuff, just be comforted by this saying that I always live by Jim Carrey. You can just as easily fail doing something you hate, so you may as well do something you love. You can tweak that so many ways. You can just as easily fail being someone else, so you may as well be yourself. You can just replace those words with almost anything, and you can see what we mean. There's no guarantee in life. So at least if you do it your way and you're authentic and you still end up with nobody or haters, worst case scenario haters, hey, at least one person's happy. At least you did it your way. And you can at least say that. But can you imagine if you did it everybody else's way and then you still failed, because you still have the same odds? Well, guess what? You failed, tapos, you're a fake pa. So this is why it's important to be authentic. Just be authentic. Don't be afraid, because there's no guarantee the other way either. And then it's a prison. You fall into this prison because you're trying to always chase that approval. You're trying to chase that, chase the likes, chase the love, chase the acceptance. And you realize that you can't be everything to everyone. So even when you're trying to be that person, you're upsetting a certain sector. Ah, you may as well have been yourself.
Your selfies are awesome. From local celebrities to Air Supply to Cesar Millan to Steven Seagal to Big John McCarthy, what would be your top three dead or alive selfie wish list?
Let me just make it easy for myself first, and I'll try and answer better. So Conor McGregor, Dana White, and Michael Chandler, right? That's, I know they're all UFC, but in life itself, dead or alive. You really put me on the spot because there's so many, but Anthony Bourdain, I think he's a good human, you know, and I would want to know what went on inside. And Robin Williams, the same thing. Maybe Princess Diana, because I find her a very intriguing character as well, that really changed the world in many ways and went through a lot of suffering herself. And I'm sure she'd have, if given the opportunity to speak freely without this pressure from the royals or society, you could learn, humanity could gain a lot from the insights that I think she could share. So there. Princess Di and Anthony Bourdain, Robin Williams. I'm sure there are more, but off the top of my head, that's the best I can do.
You've hosted Miss Earth several times. Does it entail a different type of preparation compared to your other gigs?
Yeah, it does. It does, because there's so many moving parts that you don't have as much freedom, but surprisingly, they do give me more freedom than I thought, but they don't have much freedom as, let's say, a lot of other gigs, because there's so many moving parts that need to work off the same script. So it's not that they don't trust you. It's not that they don't think that you can carry an ad lib and all that. It's more cues. So you have to be very exact with your cues. You have to be very exact with your blocking, where you're standing, how you're holding the mic, where you're looking, where the cameras are, where your floor director is, and you have to make sure that you're speaking, especially previously to pandemic, you have got to be equally focused to the live crowd that's there, which is really hard, and a television audience around the world, which is in the hundreds of millions, I think they said, because it's over 180 countries that they used to broadcast to simultaneously on top of the Facebook Live. So they do the televised network thing that they would do, and then syndicated, and then they would do it on Facebook Live. So it was literally in the hundreds of millions when you added that all up. So who do you prioritize? Who do you talk to? How do you, you have to have a tone, and you have to have an audience that you, you're either TV or live, but here it's a hybrid system. So it's very, very difficult to get that correct and keep the energy up without actually over drowning on the other side. And I'm not saying I've learned the hard way, because I remember one or two events, there was some debate about my style. Some people were saying, it's too much. It's too much energy. It's like a boxing announcer. And some people saying, but that's what I like. So it was hard, because I was as close to being perfect with the live crowd, but to the TV audience, they were like, it's too much, because out of context. So that's what takes a lot, is learning how to find that balance between the two, live and televised, sticking to the blocking, the cues, but still being natural. So there's a lot to think about, because on top of all of that, after you figure all the technical part out, where to stand, how to, where to be, what camera to look at, and all that, now be natural while still being constrained with all of that. But that's the challenge. That's a challenge, because if you don't have that challenge, I don't have any real value to what I do. And this is how I always look at things, is that if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. So you got to think about it that way. There is a reason why you're allowed to charge what you charge, and there's a reason why people still want you or you're in demand. It's because it's not something that everybody can do. It's a skill that is, you can work on for sure, but when you're in an event, right, if you are the event organizer, having a host that's experienced is insurance for you. So it's not necessarily just the time you're paying for. You're buying an insurance policy. You're also buying a little bit of credibility and image. So it's not just what you do there on the day, but your real value comes when things go wrong. That's when, because anyone can memorize a script. You give somebody a long enough time to memorize a script, and they'll memorize where to stand, etc. But what happens, which always happens, when something goes wrong? That's what separates the difference between being a super pro, or that's what companies say, okay, it's worth paying for, because we don't want that hassle. So get somebody who knows what they're doing, has been in that spot before and knows what happens. Just like Steve Harvey, when that thing happened with the famous, you know, calling out, he was man enough to know what to do. You know, I mean, I can't think of many other people, even people I admire, who would have been able to pull through the way he did. And I think he's just a legend. And that would be one of my bucket lists, to be able to one day just stand in his shoes. Because even though I'm not necessarily a pageant guy per se, it has been like with Miss Earth, there's a natural graduation to Miss Universe. And that would be lovely to just be able to say in a few years' time, hosted Miss Universe.
James, thank you so much for spending time here at the podcast. But before we close, may I request that you please share with us some words of encouragement for anyone listening who would like to make their own mark in the world.
If you're trying to make your own mark in the world, just remember, it's your mark, okay? So don't be too obsessed with what other people tell you to do, because it's your mark nga. I'll tell you a quick story to support this. When I was first starting out here in the Philippines, I was told by everybody, like all my relatives and friends and stuff, because I come here for holiday, they said, don't worry, you'll be a superstar in no time. You'll be an artista, you'll be this, because you've got the looks, you've got the this, you've got the voice, you've got the... And I fell for it, you know. I'm not ashamed to say that I drank the Kool-Aid, and I completely, yeah, fell for the whole thing. And my joke now is that when I went back to Australia, I quit my job, which is true. That part's not a joke. I sold my business. I sold everything I had, told my wife we're packing up, and we moved. We moved within 6 months. That's how fast the whirlwind was. And when I got here, the joke was that was the screensaver. And when I got here, somebody moved the mouse. Biglang na spreadsheet lahat. Wala na yung beautiful no, screensavers. So I spent the first few years of my time here going to VTRs, castings, talent, whatever, right? And it was a soul-crushing, very demotivating experience because you're dealing with rejection day in, day out, sometimes multiple times per day. And then I realized something. The reason that there was so much failure and rejection and stuff like that is because when you go to a VTR, and you can apply this to life, the VTR casting director guy goes, oh, say, yeah, say these lines, say it like this. We're looking for this guy with this kind of hair, this kind of thing. So they're creating a little hoop for you that they're designing. Now jump through that hoop. Jump through it. Come on. Of course, most of us are going to miss. They're so specific with what they want, right? And then it's a reflection of our failure that we didn't become that. Yung pala, they wanted a blonde hair, blue eyes, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they just have to fill the casting floor. So they'll just get you. But it still eats up inside of you. The point I'm trying to make is if you try to be that person and get through that little hoop, well, those are going to be your chances. Now, try to reverse it. Do you think Morgan Freeman still auditions for voice roles? No, right? What do you think happens with Morgan Freeman? They write the roles around his voice. Why? Nobody else has a voice like Morgan Freeman. But if Morgan Freeman tried to sound like James Deacon every time, or tried to sound like Steve Harvey or Dana White or Joe Rogan or whoever the hell you want, right? Well, guess what? We wouldn't even remember him. We wouldn't know him. He wouldn't be successful. But because he was him, he just did him. The world will conspire, the universe conspires to make things happen for you. You know why? Because you seem to know where you're going. And the law of attraction is you will bring that to you. It's very powerful. It's actually quite simple, but it's very, very powerful. You do you. Nobody does you better than you. And if you think there's no market for that, you obviously haven't been on the internet. There's a market for everything. There's almost 8 billion people now in the world, and almost everyone has an internet connection. If you can't tell me there's not somebody out there that appreciates what you do better than anyone else and is not willing to pay for it, you're just not working hard enough. You're not looking hard enough. I'm sorry. I don't care how bad you think you are. You do something better than somebody else. Spend some time and find out what that is. Don't be so hung up on trying to be somebody else. You will never, ever, ever be successful trying to be someone else. Another thing that I would try to tell you is don't think that you will get successful and rich swapping your time for money. You have to got to look at something deeper. Because if you're trying to be successful and rich, swapping your time for your money is just a very closed loop. You're just not going to break out of a certain... So you have to just invest in yourself, put that out there to the universe, and watch how the universe conspires to make things happen for you, because there's a natural energy that you're putting out that you know where you're going, and energy likes to follow people who know where they're going. It's that simple.
That's it for today. Let me know what you think. Send in some questions and perhaps share this episode with people you know who might be interested to listen. Till the next episode. Cheers.